A reading from the book of Deuteronomy. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your people. You shall heed such a prophet. This is what you requested of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly, when you said, "If I hear the voice of the Lord my God any more, or ever again see this great fire, I will die." Then the Lord replied to me, "They are right in what they have said. I will raise up from them a prophet like you from among their own people. I will put my words in the mouth of the prophet, who shall speak to them anything that I command. Anyone who does not heed the words that prophet shall speak in my name, I myself will hold accountable. But any prophet who speaks in the names of other gods, or who presumes to speak in my name a word that I have not commanded the prophet to speak, that prophet shall die."
Hear the Gospel of Christ according to Mark, chapter 1 and beginning at verse 21. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus entered the synagogue and taught. They were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. They were all amazed. They kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." At once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee.
There's a story told of a young Navajo woman who came to visit a friend in New York City. The friend was delighted and escorted the woman around the bustling, noisy, and vibrant city. As they were passing down Fifth Avenue in one of Manhattan's concrete canyons, with the sound of people and traffic all but deafening, the Navajo woman suddenly stopped. "I hear a cricket," she said. Her friend gave her a queer look. "There are no crickets in Manhattan, I'm afraid." But the woman went to the gutter and picked up the little cricket. "That's amazing," said her friend. "Not really," she replied. "It's all in what you listen for." Then the woman took a coin out of her pocket, flicked it in the air, letting it fall, clinking on the footpath. Immediately, people stopped and heads turned. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. God is all around us. We live within God. Yet oddly, like with a cricket, we are not often aware of God. We don't listen for the right thing. We don't hear. We don't see. We are like Brazilian amphibian fish, whose eyes have two lenses, one for seeing under the water and one for seeing above the water. But most of us, most of the time, have cataracts on our second lenses. We commonly do not perceive the world of spirit. The Bible uses several metaphors to talk about our not being aware of the sacred realm. One such metaphor is hard hearts. Heart in the biblical tradition is an image for the self at its deepest level. For the ancient Hebrews, the heart was not simply associated with feelings of love or courage. It was also associated with intellect, volition, and even perception. What mattered was the condition of the heart. One could have a hard heart or a soft heart. A hard heart is also one that's closed, shut, a fat heart, encrusted in a thick layer, a heart that is proud and puffed up. Or one can have a soft heart, a tender heart, a heart made of flesh. A hard heart is associated with sensory malfunction and intellectual incomprehension. A fat heart shuts the ears and the eyes and darkens the mind. A proud heart goes with arrogance, strife, or greed. A hard heart does not know the sacred and has no sense of awe. With hard hearts, we have eyes but do not see, ears but do not hear, minds but do not understand. The reason we do not hear God, but hear the tinkle of a coin instead, is because our heart is clogged. Like arteriosclerosis, there's been a hardening of our arteries, and we need to attend to it for the sake of our spiritual health. As any cardiologist will say, we need to attend to both diet and exercise. A sustainable spiritual diet does not mean shutting oneself in a monastery and eating locusts and wild honey. We simply need the discipline of eating less of some foods and more of some others. In Philippians 4:8, Paul writes, "Whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, pleasing and commendable. Think about these things." He's talking about filling up on good spiritual food and staying off junk. Spiritual junk food includes all the messages and symbols that tell us that more is better, size matters, looks are everything, misfortune is deserved, forgiveness is for sissies, and aging sucks. You might want to add to that list. Staying off such junk will mean being very selective about what television you watch, what magazines and books you read, and what conversations you want to be part of and what you contribute to them. Healthy food, to expand on St. Paul, includes feeling the wind in your hair and reveling in it, walking without a cell phone, taking your shoes off on the beach, reading out loud to friends, children, or the elderly, singing in the shower, or anywhere for that matter, reading something at least once a day that makes you feel good about yourself and about others, finding a few minutes to listen to your breathing, writing a letter telling someone that you appreciate them, smiling more often, thanking more frequently, laughing. These things will nurture and sustain your spirit. This is diet. Exercise, as we know, is harder work. Exercise involves understanding the programming that gives rise to your emotions, language, and actions, and freeing yourself from its control. If you take a look at the way you function, you'll find inside your head there is a whole program, a set of demands about how the world should be and how you should be. This program was written and revised by your culture, family, and past experiences. Now, wherever you go, that program is active and insistent that its demands be met. If they are met, you are allowed to be happy and peaceful. If they are not met, even though it's nobody's fault, the program generates negative emotions that cause you to suffer. When other people, for instance, don't live up to your program's expectations, it torments you with frustration or anger. Or when things are not under your control or the future is uncertain, your program insists that you experience anxiety and worry. Then you spend a lot of energy coping with these negative emotions. It doesn't have to be this way. You're not going to be able to change your programming all that quickly, or perhaps ever. But if you spend time seeing it for what it is, it will cease to have the same power over you. This is spiritual exercise. Try imagining you're in a situation that you find unpleasant and that you would ordinarily avoid. Now observe how your programming instinctively becomes active, insisting that you avoid the situation or try to change it. If you stay on and refuse to change the situation, observing your programming insists that you experience irritation or anxiety. Now keep looking at this unpleasant situation until you realize that it isn't what is causing the negative emotions. Rather, it's your programming that is. You will see this better if you realize that someone with a different programming, when faced with the same situation, will react quite calmly. Think, for example, about life on Auckland motorways and the different reactions to somebody changing lanes. What will cause one person rage, another will accept quite calmly. Real oppression comes not from people who make life difficult for you, but from your programming that destroys your peace of mind the moment outside circumstances fail to conform with its demands. It's from the oppression of your programming that you need to be liberated. Only then will you experience inner freedom. This is what I mean by spiritual exercise. And like all exercise, it needs to become habitual. This will get your spiritual heart pumping. Slowly and surely, you'll find your heart becoming tender, receptive, able to perceive God more fully, and able to receive from God more willingly. Then you will notice the little things and not be blinded by the big things. You will hear the songs of grace and not be deafened by the traffic of self-centeredness.